From the main public broadcasting network, I'm Barbara Caridi.
I'm Tom Porter, and for Tuesday, February 12th, this is Main Things Considered. Crossing the border, New Brunswick Premier Sean Graham tells Maine lawmakers he wants closer ties, particularly in energy.
Dangerous conditions on Maine's highways as salt supplies run low and the bad weather continues.
And nuts to Hollywood. The Bodenham brothers who export raw food snacks to the stars.
After going raw and trying this lifestyle, we were so excited by it. You know, we were like, make something that's raw and try to sell it. It was that simple.
Those stories are coming up, but first, this news.
For MPBN News, I'm Ed Morin. Another winter storm is bearing down on Maine with as much as a foot of snow expected in some locations. 50 miles inland, there could be a lot of icing as snow mixes with sleet and freezing rain. The entire coast will eventually see all rain, but could still get 5 to 9 inches of snow. The Portland Jet Port was already reporting delays and cancellations early this afternoon. Airport officials say departure delay should be expected tomorrow morning. Some municipalities are already issuing parking bans. And Central Maine Power says it's making preparations for the storm. The company says it has extra tree-trimming crews working in many areas in anticipation of heavy, sticky snow. New Brunswick Premier Sean Graham today told a joint session of the Maine Legislature that he wants to build on a very long tradition of friendship between the state and the province.
Our statistics show that 90% of our province's exports in 2006 went to the U.S., of which approximately 10% were here in the Maine market.
Graham says a major area in which the two can form partnerships is energy generation and distribution. Graham also hopes to see a slowed-down approach to a new federal passport requirement for crossing the border. Congressman Tom Allen is crying foul over a fundraising video being used to promote Senator Susan Collins' bid for re-election. In it, Collins links MoveOn.org support of Allen's Senate campaign with images of the organization's activists burning flags and carrying banners that say, "We support our troops," when they shoot their officers. Congressman Allen's photo is also included with the images.
I thought it was over the top because it tried to make MoveOn.org into some extremist radical group, which of course it isn't.
Collins' campaign spokesman Steve Abbott says the senator has an obligation to counter a series of attack ads that were aired against her by MoveOn.org. More on this story coming up. The Maine Civil Liberties Union is reacting strongly to a vote today by the U.S. Senate that rejected an attempt to strip telecom immunity from the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act currently being considered by Congress. Both of Maine's U.S. senators voted with a majority in the 31-67 tally. MCLU Executive Director Shenar Bellows says she's disappointed in the votes by GOP Senators Olympia Snow and Susan Collins.
This repudiates over 2 years of work by a variety of Mainers who came together looking for answers about whether their privacy had been violated by the federal government and Verizon.
The MCLU and others have questioned whether phone companies engaged in illegal activities in connection with the Bush administration's warrantless wiretapping and data mining programs. In press statements, Verizon has denied that it illegally shared customer information with the National Security Administration. In the weather, snow moves into York County before midnight tonight, reaching all but far northern Maine by dawn. Snow falls heavily tomorrow north of Bethel, Millinocket, and Holton. Snow blends with sleet and freezing rain south to Bridgeton, Bangor, and Vanceboro. Icing will be extensive. Precipitation blends to all rain along the coast. The storm winds down after dusk, highs 20 to the mid-30s. Accumulations 4 to 7 inches in the north, 8 to 12 inches in interior west and central Maine, 5 to 9 inches along the coast. More on the forecast later in the program. For MPBN News, I'm Ed Morin.
This is Maine Things Considered. I'm Tom Porter.
And I'm Barbara Caridi. Maine's close relationship with the neighboring province of New Brunswick got a little closer today. New Brunswick Premier Sean Graham paid a visit to the state, where he met with business leaders and attended a tourism conference. But the highlight of his trip was an address to a joint session of the legislature. As Murray Carpenter reports, energy issues topped the premier's agenda.
Sean Graham's address to the Maine legislature was the first by a New Brunswick premier. In his remarks, Graham touched on many shared interests: imports and exports, border crossing regulations, tourism opportunities such as two-nation vacations, and educational partnerships between community college systems. And Graham talked about energy.
Now, last year, Governor Baldacci and I signed a memorandum of understanding to increase interjurisdictional cooperation between the state and the province on electrical interconnections. We are pleased that officials are working so diligently to complete the second phase of that study that will lead to greater connectivity between our two respective regions.
New Brunswick and Maine are both working to improve the electrical transmission lines between this region and the large electricity markets in southern New England. And later, in a press briefing, Premier Graham said his aspirations are higher yet.
In New Brunswick, we're working to position our province as the energy hub for the Eastern Seaboard.
Among the energy projects now being developed in New Brunswick, 400 megawatts of wind power and a new Irving oil refinery that would double the province's refining capacity to 600,000 barrels of output daily. And there's more.
Currently constructing the first liquefied natural gas plant in Canada. It's going to put 1 billion cubic feet of gas per day into the pipeline system. We're refurbishing our existing nuclear power generating station, an investment of approximately $1.4 billion. There's a consortium of private sector companies that have now come forward as well to look at building a new nuclear power generating station using advanced CANDU technology. This is an investment anywhere in the $5 billion to $6 billion range.
It's that last issue that shows a key policy distinction between New Brunswick and Maine. New Brunswick is refurbishing its nuclear power plant at Point Lepreau and considering building a larger plant adjacent. But Maine's only nuclear power plant in Wiscasset was shut down in 1997. But Governor John Baldacci says it's not up to Maine to interfere with New Brunswick's nuclear future.
I can only do, and Maine can only do, what it thinks is the right thing to do in its structure. We aren't going to be dictating to the province or anybody else what to do or what not to do. They get different dynamics.
And for now, Baldacci says, the neighboring governments are focusing on shared goals, like improving electricity transmission lines. Here's New Brunswick Energy Minister Jack Keir, who accompanied Graham to the State House.
And I think one of those win-win opportunities is the reliability of our grids. And if we combine that in Maine and New Brunswick, it gives us an opportunity to have a larger grid and to balance more of that renewable energy moving forward. I think that's a wonderful opportunity.
But what will a new energy partnership actually mean for Maine? Eventually, says Public Utilities Commission Chairman Kurt Adams, Maine and New Brunswick could create a power pool of their own, and Maine could withdraw from ISO New England, its current power pool partner. And Adams says this could lead to lower rates. In the near term, he expects several proposals for building new transmission lines, and he says the developers will have to answer an important question.
Are Maine consumers going to see a tangible benefit in our rates for hosting this infrastructure? Transmission lines are difficult to site for a reason. They're not very aesthetically pleasing. They're very difficult to build. And Maine people need to get something out of hosting all of this. And I think when the cases come into the Maine PUC, much of the burden is going to be on the applicants, the transmission providers, to make that case.
Among the other energy projects that Baldacci and Graham discussed briefly are the proposed LNG ports in Passamaquoddy Bay, which Baldacci supports and Graham opposes. But both agreed that developing wind power and other renewable energy sources will be key to the region's long-term energy future. For MPBN News, I'm Murray Carpenter.
Dozens of accidents, from fender benders to serious crashes, have been reported throughout the state over the past few days. State police say that dozens of cars slid off highways over the weekend, including three Transportation Department vehicles and one driven by state police. But ice and snow might not be entirely to blame. As Keith McKean reports, a shortage of salt could also have played a role.
Reached on the cell phone in his cruiser, Orono Bay State Police Lieutenant Wes Hussey says from about 3 o'clock Sunday afternoon to 2 o'clock Monday afternoon, over 60 cars slid off I-95 in Penobscot County.
The roads were bad. The roads were very icy. There was some damage. There was some DOT vehicles involved. We even had a truck weight trooper get struck by another vehicle while he was at the scene of a vehicle that struck a DOT grader. There was a tractor-trailer in the median that was still there this morning. They were waiting for the roads to break up so the wreckers could get in there and pull it out.
Hussey says the roads didn't seem to be well treated, if at all. Randy Gray, an official with the Maine Department of Transportation, says crews in some regions have already treated the highways more this year than in the past 2 years combined. As a result, he says, the salt supply has often been low. David Bernhardt, director of maintenance and operations for the DOT, says the salt shortage is due in large measure to a greater demand throughout the snow-covered Northeast.
The suppliers themselves are having problems getting truckers to truck it. They're having not necessarily shortages of the salt, but a lot of it has to do with just getting the material from the mines or from the ports to the salt sheds. That has been the biggest issue, is trucking.
It's not only the DOT that struggled to maintain an adequate supply of salt for the state's roads. Bernhardt says some municipalities have been running low as well. Mike Starn, a spokesman for the Maine Municipal Association, says whether a city or town is having a salt crunch often depends on its budget calendar.
The July-June fiscal year communities have probably spent most of their public works budget just up till now, and so now they're with very limited resources in their budget, and they still have a couple months of winter to go.
The thought of inadequate salt supplies is not comforting for drivers like Abigail Coffey. The University of Southern Maine student says she was frightened during extremely slippery conditions last week.
The roads were just really bad, and I found my car was just sliding all over the place, so I had to be really careful, just drive slower. It definitely worries me, especially during the winter. I mean, there should be salt on the roads.
Waldoboro resident Bob Weintraub says he's worried about slick highways, but he says sometimes the highways are treated with too much salt.
They don't use enough sand in their salt mixes, so they're using too much salt, and if they mix it with sand, they'd get a longer possibility for coverage.
But motorist Dottie Harrison of Liberty says that, quite simply, drivers have choices.
I think that the Department of Transportation is doing the best they can, and that if you don't need to be on the roads, stay off the roads and allow those people who have to get to work or emergency rescue to go, and if it's not safe, just stay home.
Although a salt shortage may have been a factor in dozens of cars sliding off slippery roads, the Department of Transportation says more is already arriving in Maine to replenish the supply. Meanwhile, a spokesman for the Maine Turnpike Authority says the agency is always prepared with enough salt for a worst-case scenario, and this year is no exception. For MPBN News, I'm Keith McKean.
Congressman Tom Allen says Senator Susan Collins has gone too far in a recent fundraising video that includes him in a series of images with MoveOn.org demonstrators. Allen says he does not share the beliefs of the protesters who are burning American flags and carrying banners proclaiming, "We support our troops when they shoot their officers." But the Collins campaign says Allen can't accept $365,000 from MoveOn.org donors and separate himself from the group's tactics or rhetoric. A.J. Higgins reports.
The video link to an emailed fundraising appeal from Republican Senator Susan Collins opens with some ominous guitar chords in a reprint of the controversial MoveOn.org ad that asked, "General Petraeus or General Betrayus?" The montage then depicts Congressman Tom Allen on MoveOn.org's internet webpage and announces that MoveOn.org donors have contributed more than $365,000 to the Democratic congressman's bid to unseat Collins this fall. The video message then dissolves into flag burnings, war demonstrators, and a woman with bloody hands confronting Secretary of State Condoleezza Rice.
I just thought the ad was really over the top for Maine.
Congressman Tom Allen says he would not participate in flag-burning parties or other activities featured in Collins' video, but he says the senator's fundraising appeal goes too far by attempting to demonize MoveOn.org, a liberal public policy advocacy group that has raised millions of dollars for Democrats nationally and more than $365,000 for Allen personally.
When you really understand MoveOn.org, you know that there are several million people who want to bring our troops safely home from Iraq. They want universal health care. They believe the middle class has been left behind. That's the kind of group it is. And it certainly, it makes pitches to its members to support different candidates. They typically make contributions in very modest amounts. It's, frankly, it's not a scary group. It really isn't at all.
I just couldn't disagree more.
Steve Abbott is Collins' campaign manager, and through much of last year, his boss was on the receiving end of MoveOn.org's pointed advertisements that he says revealed the organization's bare-knuckled approach to campaigning.
MoveOn.org has done things like send out fundraising solicitation with Susan Collins' teeth blacked out. They've urged their supporters to bird dog Senator Collins at events. They've organized rallies and protests targeting her for various issues. They've had rallies across the country where they've just spewed venom.
Last year, the two-term Republican complained bitterly when she learned MoveOn.org was behind a series of critical ads, including one featuring children dressed in military fatigues who were being forced to crawl under barbed wire. After that, Abbott says Collins decided it was time to respond.
We are not just going to sit here and let MoveOn.org bash us for an entire year without taking a swing back.
At Maine's Republican state headquarters, Executive Director Julie O'Brien remained philosophical about Allen's reaction to the Collins video.
I think he has a right to be offended. He has a right to, you know, to feel any way he wants.
But she says if the Portland Democrat is going to accept money from MoveOn.org's donors and refuses to denounce its messages or tactics, then he can't expect too much sympathy from Maine voters.
If he's going to be supported by them and use their resources, the resources just keep going on and on, then he needs to stick with it. He needs to, you know, MoveOn.com.
Not surprisingly, Arden Manning, the executive director of the Maine Democratic Party, has an entirely different assessment of the Collins video.
For someone who talks a sort of nonpartisan game, I have to say that's the most shrill, over-the-top attack ad that I think I've seen in Maine ever. You know, I'd expect this from George Bush or Karl Rove. It seems like it's right out of their playbook.
Abbott says unlike many of the MoveOn.org productions, the video in the Collins fundraising message is not an ad, a distinction that may elude some Mainers once the video starts making the rounds on the Internet. For MPBN News, I'm A.J. Higgins.
Seth Leaf likes to go raw. No, he's not a nudist. Seth and his brother Davey are raw food specialists, in particular, nuts. From the basement of their modest house in Bodenham, about 30 miles from Portland, their company, Living Nuts, supplies health food stores across the country. For a small seven-man operation, Living Nuts has a high profile. Their product has proved a big hit in Hollywood. Among the biggest fans are Woody Harrelson and Shirley MacLaine. And recently, the brothers shipped out about 1,500 bags to LA to be served at the Screen Actors Guild Awards. It's proof, says Seth, of the growing market for what's called living food.
It's basically eating a diet that has not been cooked with any kind of heat at all. It's sun food nutrition, basically. It's food that's heated by the sun, grown by the sun. Living food is filled with enzymes, nutrients, probiotics, all kinds of things that cooked food tends to not have in it.
The brothers process about 2,000 pounds of nuts and seeds every week, treating them with 19 certified organic flavorings, including spicy onion garlic, lemon tahini twist, and sweet ones like banana bread and cinnabon. Seth and Davey have been in the nut business since 2001. They've seen sales double nearly every year since then.
We've fulfilled a niche, but also, you know, I do all the sales and marketing, and I put a lot of time and energy into the growth of the business.
What strategy have you been using to achieve this growth?
A lot of my style is more a guerrilla marketing kind of style. I like to focus on just direct communications with customers.
Okay, so now health food stores are aware of you. They're buying your products. Is this like a nationwide thing or certain parts of the country more than others?
No, it's nationwide. It's all over the United States and Canada. And, you know, that is also from person-to-person, word-to-mouth advertising. It's just really trying to educate people about the product. Mostly the grocery buyer in a health food store, I like to really give them a lot of information and just kind of download their brain with why our product is so important and different than anything else that's in a health food store.
Why is it more important and more different than anything else in a health food store, by the way?
Well, when we set out to do this product, our original intention was basically to create a product that was as healthy as it could be and as tasty as it could be, which is kind of like a contradiction in the health food world. People think, you know, really healthy food doesn't taste great, but it's good for you, you know. And so we wanted to bridge the gap and make food that tastes great and is super healthy at the same time.
Well, let's go downstairs and see how it's made. We head down a short flight of stairs to the basement where the nuts are prepared 24 hours a day.
And that's Neil.
Hi, guys. All right. So, let's start with the process. You get nuts come in one end, and you get your treated nuts come out the other. What raw products come in? What raw materials do you use?
First of all, obviously, there's the nuts and seeds that we use. That's probably the main ingredient in everything. Then there's a whole different host of powders, oils, seasonings, you know, other kinds of nuts to use in the mixtures, and just a lot of different ingredients.
So what are these guys doing here?
I'm Dave, Dave Dunn.
Dave, what are you doing right now?
Just breaking up the nuts so that we can package them easier, store them in these buckets here.
Have these nuts been treated yet?
Yep, they've been in the dehydrator for 5 days. So they're good to go.
Before the nuts can be treated and left to dry, Seth says they have to be soaked for up to 12 hours.
Soaking disarms the enzyme inhibitors that prevent it from growing. It's basically the same process as a nut being on a tree. It falls to the ground in the autumn. Then it sits through the winter. Then in the spring, the rains start to fall on it. It moisturizes the nut, activates it, and it starts to come to life and grow. It sprouts. So it's basically that process. We're duplicating that by soaking it.
This kind of bringing it back to life.
Bringing it back to life, yeah. It makes it more alkaline. It expands the nut. The nut expands, so you know it just takes on a whole different texture. It's light, and there's different tannins and toxins and things that are inherent in the nut, and those dissolve. Then after that, we take them, mix in all the certified organic ingredients. Then we stick them in the dehydrators after that.
Well, can I see what all the fuss is about? Can I try one?
Absolutely, yeah. Yeah. One of these try. This is a banana bread walnut.
Banana bread walnut?
Yep.
Oh, broken tooth. No, I'm kidding. That's lovely. And they're living nuts. They're alive. It's a very labor-intensive and time-consuming process. Racks of small dehydrating machines line one of the walls. There are no conveyor belts, and mixing is done by hand. Seth Leaf says that's why the product is so expensive. A 4-ounce bag costs $7.
Our profit margins are not very high. Our product is really expensive the way it is, and we've tried to keep everything as low as we can, but it's all certified organic. You know, it's a 7-day process from when we get the nut till it's packaged up to make. So profitability is not extreme. It's more of a labor of love. We pay all the bills, we keep the ball rolling, but we're not going to be a Fortune 500 company.
So I'm saying it's quite a small operation. I can see three people down here now. You're talking about expanding in the future. How are you going to do that and keep the quality, keep the same, you know, kind of cottage industry feel about it?
Well, we're going to have to obviously get another location, a bigger location with more square footage to be able to grow this. And if we hired twice the amount of people that we have now, it's still going to be a small industry. And the nature of this product, there's really no way to rush it or cut corners at all. It's a slow process, and that's just the nature of the business. So,
will you be staying in Maine as you grow?
I think so, yeah.
Seth Leaf there from Living Nuts, based in Bodenham, Maine. Its website is www.livingnuts.com. That's nuts with a Z.
And it's 6:03, time to check the forecast with Max Reisman.
A winter storm warning is in effect for the entire state starting tonight and going through tomorrow evening. The clouds will continue to increase with snow arriving around midnight in southern Maine tonight. 3 to 6 inches of snow will likely fall by dawn tomorrow south and west of Augusta. Lows overnight near 10 north, near 20 south. Snow moves into northern Maine while snow changes to sleet and freezing rain across the western mountains. It'll be all rain for the afternoon in southern and eastern Maine. An inch of liquid rain may fall on top of the snow from the morning, and that could create lots of flooding problems for the urban areas. A half inch of freezing rain accretion is possible in the interior valleys. All in all, a very messy day with the greatest amounts of snow over northern Maine, where 8 to 12 inches will fall. Across the rest of the state, generally 4 to 8 inches, although by the end of the day in southern Maine, substantially less will be left on the ground. Highs tomorrow near 20 in Aroostook County. Highs soar into the mid-30s in southern Maine. The snow will end tomorrow night with a flash refreezing of lots of wet surfaces, so slippery roads will be the rule on Wednesday night. Lows 15 to 25. The sun is back for Thursday, and highs will reach the low 20s north and low 30s south. Thursday night starts clear, but clouds will be on the increase. Lows drop to near 5 below zero up north, near 15 above zero south. Cloudy skies with scattered snow showers on Friday, highs in the low 20s to low 30s. For the Maine Public Broadcasting Network, I'm meteorologist Max Reisman.
That's Maine Things Considered for this Tuesday. We had production help from Susan Sharon. I'm Tom Porter.
And I'm Barbara Caritti. Thanks for listening.